Tchaikovsky's Dance of the Hay Girls.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Impact every fourth Tuesday, 12 noon. Learn about people and organizations making a difference in your metro community. Get information on newly formed organizations seeking a change. Get updates from current organizations and people who are working to reach the need and concerns as well as serve. Join me every fourth Tuesday at 12 noon on Impact. All right, and this is Betty Daniels. I want to thank you again for joining me on the fourth Tuesday of Impact. We had such a good time last fourth Tuesday talking with our ladies who are two storytellers. Mm-hmm. So I invited them both to come back again and do a little bit more of a sharing about this. So I'm happy to start. Okay. Introduce yourselves again. Start with my lady over here.
All right. Good afternoon. My name is Gwendolyn Lewis, and I'm a member of the Detroit Association of Black Storytellers. And not only that, that is not the only organization that's around. There are many others, but however, I belong to that one along with Detroit Story League.
Okay, and my other lady?
My name is Cheryl Olden, and I belong as well to many other organizations, including Parent Tellers, which is a different kind of twist. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about
okay,
it later.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, did you two have something particular that you wanted to share for this particular story? I remember you mentioned in your trailer about doing a presentation. So do you have a story that you want to share this time?
A story to share?
Yes.
A storyteller cannot walk any place without sharing a story.
Okay. All right. Now, let's kind of like with dovetailing what you were saying about the two of you are from two different types of storytelling.
Well, we actually attend all of the meetings. All of them are the same, but there was just one additional meeting that sort of is my precious baby. I love going to this meeting.
So okay. All right. Okay. And
then,
and what is this precious baby of yours?
It's called Parent Tellers.
Okay.
And it's a group of storytellers that come together at a school on the east side of Detroit. And we meet every Thursday and we tell each other stories and we critique.
Okay.
And we give great feedback, and we have an opportunity to just look at what trends are going on now in storytelling so that we're always aware of best practices.
Okay, all right. Gwen.
Yes, when sharing some stories, we as storytellers are not the traditional storytellers. I'm not just talking about Cheryl and myself.
Okay.
I'm talking about those in the Detroit Association of Black Storytellers and the Detroit Story League.
Okay.
We don't learn to read upside down with a book. We are interactive storytellers.
All right.
That means that we get everybody involved, whether it's standing up clapping, whether it's making a sound, whether it's just repetition, or singing a song.
All right.
So
all right.
That makes us slightly different than a regular storyteller.
Okay. Are you going to be able to give me an example of that interactive stuff like right now?
Yes, I think I can.
Okay.
Now, here's an excerpt of the story, The Boy and the Yam.
All right.
And it's a Yorubian tale where all respect the boy who is ever born with a yam in his hand. And this little fellow, at last, through generations, was born with a yam in his hand. Well, as the story starts off, she's sent into the jungle to get some branches so mom can fix a fire to make the dye for herself and her family and the rest of the village so they can have beautiful outfits.
All right.
Well, as we start, you said that interaction, when he's ready to go, the Dad said, don't forget the yam. The mom says, don't forget the yam. Then I asked the audience to follow through with me as I twirl my arm. You can't see it because you're listening. But as I twirl my arm horizontally to depict that I'm going into the jungle, and the story is going into the jungle.
All right.
I describe that he passes by a huge shrub by holding my arms out under red and blue birds, and also past hanging vines. And I use my finger to describe it, so right. That makes it part of the interaction.
All right.
But the key thing in the story, unless you really want to know the rest of the story.
All right.
Okay. Well, the thing about the story, the little boy goes into the jungle, places the yam on the stump, gather the branches, and start walking back out. Then we go over, he passed under the hanging vines. Then I get the audience to repeat some of the things
okay.
that I just
we're going to be. We're going to do. I want you to continue on instead of like giving instructions. I want you to do the story. I'll even try and join in with you if I can.
Okay.
All right.
As he leaves the spot where he left the yams, he goes back, and he goes under the hanging vines. He sees the red and blue birds, and he passes by the huge shrubs. Well, way back in the jungle, there are some animals lurking there, and they see that the boy left the yam on the stump. They all respect that yam, and they all know the rules about that yam, just as the humans do. So, here comes the animals. The leopard comes out to get the yam. The elephant comes out to get the yam. The giraffe comes out to get the yam. And the monkey comes out to get the yam. They start fighting for that yam. And what happens? The leopard comes out to get the yams. The elephant comes out to get the yams. The giraffe comes out to get the yams, and the monkey come out to get the yam. They're fighting over it, fighting over it. Way back in the entrance of the jungle where the little boy is carrying his branches, he stops and all of a sudden remembers what his mom had said, which was, don't forget the yam. He runs as fast as he could to get that yam. He passes by the huge shrub. He passes under the red and blue birds. He sees the hanging vines, but still he has to run as fast as he can until he comes up with a song. And it goes like this. I had a yam. I had a yam. I placed it on the stump. I placed it on the stump. My mother said don't leave it, and my daddy said it too. But I left it anyway. I left it anyway. Your turn. I had a yam. I had a yam. I placed it on the stump. I placed it on the stump. My mother said, don't leave it, and my daddy said it too, but I left it anyway. I left it anyway. Well, this little boy continued to run as fast as he could so he could get that yam, but he stopped in his tracks when he saw these animals still fighting over that yam. And it goes, the leopard said, I got it. The elephant said, I got it. The giraffe said, I got it. And the monkey said, I got it. They were going on and on and on and on. Now, this little boy had to do what most people try to do, is to use his brain to figure out the best way to get that yam without getting hurt. He used his brain. He said, I can sing. So that is what I'm going to do. So he said, I had a yam, I had a yam, I had a yam, I had a yam. The leopard said, I got it. The elephant said, I got it. The giraffe said, I got it. And the monkey said, I got it. And they went on and on, enjoying. And the little boy put his hand through the crowd, pulled that yam out, and began to run back to the village as fast as he could. He ran under the hanging vines. He saw the red and blue birds, and he passed by the shrub. He ran out of the village, the jungle, until he ran into his hut. He told his mom and dad exactly what had happened, and they did not get upset with him. They were concerned that some animal was going to come and get that yam or hurt their child. So mom, being as resourceful as she could be, she told every villager to get a stick, dip into her dye, D-Y-E, and come into her hut standing shoulder to shoulder, side by side. Well, in the meantime, way back into the jungle, the animals were still going through their song. The leopard said, I got it. The elephant said, I got it. The giraffe said, I got it. And the monkey said, I got it. Then all of a sudden, the smart leopard realized what had happened. And he said, there's no yam. Someone has come to get it. So the leopard told the elephant to go to get it. The elephant told the giraffe to get it. The giraffe told the monkey to get it. And the monkey, of course, told the leopard to get it. The leopard said, I'm going to get it, but I am not going to share it with you. So the leopard began to run through the jungle. He passed under the hanging vines. He passed under the red and blue birds. He passed by the huge shrubs, and he ran out of the jungle. He went from hut to hut, hut to hut, looking for that boy and the yam. Finally, exhausted, he came to the last one and seemed to trip and fall into the hut. Well, all the villagers were standing round there, and they took their stick and tapped him on the back of his head, on his shoulders, on his legs, on his tail. All of a sudden, the leopard jumped up and got away, running through the village and through the jungle. He ran past the huge shrubs. He ran past under the red and blue birds, and finally he ran under the hanging vines. He ran so fast until he almost bumped his friends when he got to the stump. He fell out, exhausted and tired. They looked at him, and they said, my, you look strange. Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all of you, that's the Yerubian tale of how the leopard got his spots. Let's sing it again. I had a yam, I had a yam, I placed it on the stump, I placed it on the stump. My mother said, don't leave it, and my daddy said it too, but I left it anyway, I left it anyway. And there's usually interaction throughout
okay,
the story.
Okay, all right, that was okay.
That's that we talk about.
Okay, all right. Now, earlier I was talking to my lady over here, and she was talking about us, her little orange, the orange
itty
cup.
Bitty.
Itty bitty. Itty bitty? Mm-hmm. Itty bitty, okay. All right, give us, start back, tell me how you came up with the story. Now, you were with your great?
I was with my great nephews, 4 and 5 years old, and we were sitting at McDonald's. Actually, the McDonald's on Southfield Road, and it looks out across to a condominium complex. And in that complex, up on the second floor, you could see in the window that there was a light on. And I thought as I was sitting there, I said, is there somebody in that window? I asked myself. I didn't see anything, but for a moment I thought there was someone there. So I said to my nephew, I said, do you see that man in the window? And he said, no, Auntie, I don't see a man. And he looked at me as though maybe, was I seeing something that really wasn't even there? So I asked my other great nephew, I said, do you see the man? And he said, well, I think I do. And I said, what does he have on? He said, he has on an orange hat. And I said, is it turned backwards? He said, yes. And he said, the way the cool dudes wear their hats. And I said, what else does he have on? He said, he has on an orange suit. And I said, do you really see him? Or are you making that up? He said, I really see him. And so my other great nephew said, hey, wait a minute, let me see. You know, he's the older one, and he says, let me look. He said, I don't see anything over there. He said, wait a minute, I think I do see something. And he's waving. And I said, why would he be waving? Do you think he sees you? And he says, oh, yeah, he sees me. And so we're sitting there, and we said, well, what do you think? And I said to them, what do you think this is all about? And they said, I don't know. Well, as we were sat there pondering that question, all of a sudden there was a puff of smoke. And next to me, there was someone sitting there. Now, we know that this is not what actually happened, but it's what we believe would have happened.
Okay.
If it were a fact.
Uh-huh. Now, so that way you just made up a story right then and there, huh?
Yeah.
We talk about the Yoruban stories.
Mm-hmm.
All right. African continent, that was a way of the whole, and I guess you ladies know about a little bit about that combination of stories from different parts of the African continent. Mm-hmm. What can you share anything about some of those things that you know about the different areas and how their stories evolve and things like that?
A lot of times, as I found out, some stories are evolved by their everyday life.
All right.
What they experience, their environment. They use stories to teach as we do now.
Mm-hmm.
They can be different from the southern part of Africa, the continent of Africa, to the northern part. Because of the seasons, because of, I want to say, the economics, their culture, the way they live.
Mm-hmm.
So it all depends. To tell a story, as we would do every day,
mm-hmm.
I think is a reflection of our own lives. We're trying to make a point. We're trying to share experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing.
Okay.
Their religion is from story, how they live.
Right.
Whether they see something in the air and it's consistent, in the sky, and it's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
That's how stories begin.
Okay.
You have anything you want to add to that?
Well, when I think of what has happened to the continent of Africa. So much has been taken away. Natural resources, the lives of people who are in the slave trade. But more importantly, there are so many languages, so many cultures within subcultures on the continent. And to ensure the purity of their particular group, storytelling, oral traditions were mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
You had to pass that information on. Now, what we find, for example, I tell the story that my mom was from the South, but she did not talk very much.
Okay.
I've speculated as to why she didn't talk, but I believe that some things happened to her
that she didn't want to put to words.
Okay.
They were too painful.
Right.
And so what my mother would do is she may start humming a song. And when she did that, you knew not to interrupt her in any way because she's going to tell you something that's going to be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
She had a beautiful voice.
Okay.
And she would tell us not about her life, but about life in general. It could be something that happened on television, but it was her way of letting you know to be careful. There are people out there who may not be people who are good for you.
Okay.
So it was lessons. We're right, talking right. about lessons
right.
that become the lifeblood of your family.
Okay.
This is how we function. And you learn that through the traditions, through the oral, and it is the thing that makes us unique.
Okay.
As a people.
All right. Have you ladies been called upon during this Black History Month to, and I guess I should have told you earlier, something specific that had to do with you, in a certain story where you had, I remember in your trailer you were talking about Coretta King and doing her monologue of her and stuff like that. Would you by any chance remember any of that? Or
A lot of us, of the storytelling of the Detroit Association of Black Storytellers, many of us have started reenacting characters.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is Coretta Scott King.
Okay.
As the story goes on, it was Good Friday when I was shopping with my daughter. Now, Martin and I did not want to expose our kids to a lot of creative dressing, and because we didn't want to look as if we had more money than everyone else. So as I got out of my car, opening my front door, my keys dropped. You know, your keys always drop, or something drops when you're in a hurry. The telephone was ringing. When I got to the telephone, it was Jesse. Jesse Jackson said, "Coretta, Martin has been shot." I placed the phone back on the hook, and I thought about what he had said. I needed to tell my children something about what I just heard. It took some effect, but you know, Martin had told us and educated his children that those who are trying to make a change may be hurt. Well, I gathered my things together and prepared to go to see my dear Martin. As I approached the airport and going down the VIP hall, they told me, "Miss Coretta Scott King, go to Lounge K." I went there. As I opened the door, my knees buckled because I knew something had happened to Martin. The next day, I went to see my dear Martin. I saw the first memorial service. The funeral home, the Lewis funeral home, took care of my Martin. We prepared to come back home. However, and it was on the plane that the Kennedys had provided for us. When I got back home, they wouldn't let us have Martin to be laid in state in the Capitol. Martin, who had won the Nobel Peace Prize, he could not be laid in state in the Capitol. So Spelman College allow Martin to be laid in state. Well, the next few days in pondering of what happened to my dear Martin, I was expected to go back and continue the march that Martin was supposed to have. They questioned whether I wanted to go, but I told them this is something I would do because I was in the fight just as well as Martin was in the fight. You know, they said Martin was did a lot of talking. I was the one who would encourage him to, number one, go to the door during the bus boycott in Montgomery. I was the one who wanted to go from state to state, state to state, singing and encouraging those to contribute to the cause. I was the one that Martin even was convinced that I was also blessed as he was blessed. Well, that service, the next service, oh, the church was full. Andrew Young, Rosa Parks, Ralph David Abernathy, Boehner Ruskin, all those who had supported him, including Jesse Jackson and John Lewis. After we heard the drumbeat eulogy, we all walked down the street. You could hear the horse, the mules, step by step, step by step. Jesse Jackson was holding the flag. It wasn't long for our trip to Morehouse College, where Dr. Benjamin Mays gave the final eulogy. However, with all that said, if it wasn't for that telephone call, I would not have been able to do some of the things I did later in rallies, in reforms, speaking at the United Nations, and living the life or the continued life that Martin Luther King wanted me to have.
All right. And with that, we're going to cut.
Ward, this is WHFR Dearborn, 89.3 FM. Listener-supported, non-commercial, featuring local and independent artists.
Just a reminder that 8-week class registration is still open for Henry Ford College students. The window is closing, but seats are still available for the second half of the semester. If you would like to explore an 8-week class, log on to WebAdvisor or stop by the counseling office.
Looking to add a four-legged friend to your family? Well, here's the opportunity for you. Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit is sponsoring a program for the month of February, where all adoption fees are either waived or offered at a reduced option, all thanks to a generous donation from Mary Ann Wright. So if you've been debating about the right time to get a pet, now is the time, but only for the month of February. Go to MetroDetroitAnimals.org to learn how to save one of their animals and welcome them into your home.
All right, and we're back to Impact Fourth Tuesday. And I want to thank Gwen for that presentation, okay, of Coretta Scott King and her memorial to Martin Luther King. Now we're going to have another example of storytelling from my lady. Why does I keep on blocking your name out?
Cheryl.
Cheryl. All right. And I have a cousin. My favorite cousin is Cheryl. All right. Okay. Cheryl. Share with us, please.
And I probably should preface what I'm going to say. Gwen Lewis is my mentor. She has met with me at several public libraries. She's walked me through. She's
had tough love with me. She has only asked that I do the work to get the result. You just can't get up. I did think you just could get up and tell a good story. But telling a good story, yeah, it'll get you just so far. There's study. There is a commitment. There is a beauty in the use of the English language. I am not an actor. I enjoy watching other people. I think it is a special gift that they possess, but I don't believe I have it. I think it's a form of acting, and I just have not connected with it so far. What I do enjoy doing is I like folk tales. I like to tell a story that belongs to the world, but to give my take on it, my twist on it. I also like personal stories, and I've used them throughout my career as a clinician and a manager, working with substance abusers and those with mental health issues. And to connect with them, stories have been instrumental in making some changes and creating an environment where people can look at their own behavior and begin to make some changes. So if I'm working with a group of women, and some of them have had domestic violence issues, I may tell a story based on knowing each one of them. I know how to navigate so that I can get their heart and their brain at the same time. Now, you can open somebody up, but you've got to be able to put them back together, and we know that. So it's tedious work. It's real work if you use it and you use it responsibly. Now, I like to have a good time like anybody else. I can tell a story, and I've done some things in my life that probably are a little bit funny. But I do like the opportunity to give a moral instruction. So many of our young people, nobody's telling them much of anything. And so in some instances, you have an opportunity to walk through and lay a foundation for them. Today, we were at the Noble School.
Okay.
In celebration of Black History Month. It used to be Black History Week. So we've moved on to the month.
All right.
And in preparation for going before those children, I was anxious. I wanted to do a good job, and I wanted to tell them something that would be a lasting impression. That's always something I want to do. So today, I had an opportunity to tell a story about a book that I happened upon over the last couple of weeks. And that book and the story that accompanied it has forever changed me. And I'll give you an example. There was a sound bite. I was making some soup in my kitchen, and there was something that came across the television. It said, in the state of New York, in New York City, there's one book that had been taken out of that library more than any other. Some 484,365 times in 2019 alone, this one book was taken out of that library almost 500,000 times. That fascinated me. But I was doing my thing, and I didn't think much more about it until I called my mentor and said, I need a story for the Noble School. And she said, I've got a lot going on right now. Just pick something. And I said, oh, but you told me that when you pick a story, it really picks you. And that you have to commit to that story. So really, it wasn't for her to pick the story. I needed to pick it. So I went to the library, and I looked, couldn't find it. And that soundbite came back. So I Googled it and said, what was the most which book was taken out of the New York Public Library more than any other? And then the title of the book was The Snowy Day. I'd never heard of it.
I remember, I told you, I remember hearing about that. Go ahead.
My heart was broken because I felt like I hadn't given my daughter some. This book has this kind of impact. This is something else. I need to know what's going on here. So I called my daughter. I said, hey, have you ever heard of this book? She said, yes, Mom. You know, when I was studying for education at the college, we had to read so many books, and it was the number one book. And so I went and got the book. I ordered it from the Southfield Library, drove by and got it home, looked at it, and on the title page is a black child in a red snowsuit, and the child is looking down at his footprints in wonder. And I said, wow, now this is something. Just looking at the artwork really told a story. So I wanted to know more about the author. The author, Ezra Jack Keats, was actually a painter, an illustrator. He had illustrated a number of books, but he'd never written one. And so in his studio, there was a picture of an African-American child. And someone said, hey, where'd you get that from? He said, I got this from Life magazine, 1940. There were three pictures of a young black child who had gone in for immunization. And he asked the nurse, was it going to hurt? And it showed the pictures of him asking the question, of him starting to cry because it did hurt. And this so moved Mr. Keats that he put that picture up in his studio. And that picture hung in his studio for 22 years. And he said, I want to be the illustrator of a book that talks about a black child as the protagonist, as the main character in a story. But over those 22 years, it didn't happen. And so he decided, he didn't tell any of his friends, anyone, to write a book about a black child where that child was in fact the main character. And it was the first picture book that was written. Now, what I found out further in my research, because I was in a fever pitch at this point, I had to know everything about this man. Well, I found out that Ezra was a white man. Now, that in itself wasn't a big deal, but there was things that came out as a result of that. There were people who didn't like the fact that he wrote that book, and he was a Jewish man. And as a result of that, there was some anti-Semitism going on at the time in the 60s. And he went on to write 9 more books. The character of Peter continues to live on today. And so as I told that story today, I had to also include the fact that this man not only received many accolades for that book, but he received a Caldecott Medal.
Which
is the highest honor of any kind of literature for children.
Okay.
He received it. He went to the banquet where he was going to receive his medal, and he was there with the same woman who wrote A Wrinkle in Time. They were there receiving their medals at the same time.
Okay.
Now, was that enough? Did I still need more about this man? And what I believe is what he believed is that you need to see yourself in books.
Okay.
You have to believe that you can be a teacher, you can be an illustrator, you can be an artist, you can do what you want to do, but you first got to see yourself there.
Okay.
And he bridged that gap, and I will be forever forever thankful to him. I also found out that there is a foundation. He's no longer with us, but he has an active foundation that supports literacy, and I am going to apply for a grant for my nonprofit. And I'm just so excited because today I got to tell that story for the very first time. But over the years, it's going to be my flagship story.
Okay. All right. Ladies, you know what? I know I did Lectin Impromptu, and you came through royally. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And again, now if our listening audience wanted to try and get in touch with you, Gwen, we'll go with you first. How would they get in touch with you?
Okay. Thank you very much. Gwendolyn Lewis, Post Office Box 40593, mm-hmm. Redford, Michigan, 48239. You can use the telephone number as okay. of 313-467-9294.
Okay, and Cheryl?
Cheryl Olden, the number's 248-979-2236 or creativeliteracyconcepts.org.
Okay, again, thank you both for sharing and being very, very good with this last part of Black History. And I want to make sure that I let my people know that we're going to probably hear some more from our ladies, okay? This is Betty Daniels thanking you for being a part of Black History. And then we're going to have a little bit of part of what we shared for Black History during the last part of last year, okay? And again, ladies, thank you.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Seven feet, barren, strange fruit, blood on the leaves, and blood at the roots. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees, pastoral scene. All the gallant South, them big bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, clean and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh, here is a fruit, but the crows to pluck. Rain together for the wind to suck, for the sun to rot, for the leaves to drop.
here is strange.
Talk show presentation. The opinions expressed by WHFR staff and our guests are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, administrators, anyone on our Board of Trustees, or students.
By now, you know the names by heart. Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Adams, Lafayette, the stars of the American Revolution, the men who figured it all out, how to create a new government, how to beat down the world's greatest power, how to demand freedom and then get it. But I'll bet there's a name you don't know, important, heroic, vital to the cause of freedom. His name was James. Over time, he was James Armistead Lafayette. James sure did fool them redcoats. He had them thinking that he was a waiter. They just talked up all their grand plans about how they were going to send old George Washington to his grave. James pocketed that information, then delivered it directly to the Marquis de Lafayette, the French hero of the Revolutionary War. That's why James is an American treasure. That's why it's only fitting he changed his name after he won his own freedom. James Armistead Lafayette.
If you take a hard look at the middle of the Revolutionary War, it's almost impossible to believe the Americans actually won. For most of the war, the colonials were outmanned by the British Army, which at the time was the world's greatest power. They were often outmaneuvered and outsmarted. They lost battle after battle. The United States of America was nearly destroyed before it was ever created. To win this war, the Americans needed perseverance, a sense of cunning, and a powerful desire for freedom. They also needed help to discover the battle plans of the British Army. The best way was to find a way to spy on the British and gather that information. The Americans had such a man. He was known at that time as James, a man in slavery. During the Revolutionary War, many enslaved Africans worked for the British with promises of freedom at war's end. But James asked his owner for permission to work instead for French General Marquis de Lafayette, who came to America to help the young country defeat the British.
Naturally, when you think about what's happening in the English colonies, the American colonies at that point in time, one naturally would think, since the Americans were not offering the promise of freedom, that everyone would take off and willingly support the British. So to find someone like James who was not working for them would be quite surprising and would have probably never occurred to the British generals that he ends up spying.
The British General Cornwallis had marched his soldiers from the Carolinas to Virginia. They had taken over Portsmouth and set fire to Richmond. Cornwallis put hundreds of slaves into play, using them in support roles, digging, hauling, cooking, and serving food to British soldiers. When Lafayette set up headquarters in New Kent, Virginia, he decided to do the same thing.
The American forces led by General Lafayette in Virginia were stumped because they could not get good information about what was going on behind the British lines. Here you have an enslaved person who's coming in contact with them in New Kent County and asked his master to go and serve with this man.
The first success came in a battle against former patriot and now traitor Benedict Arnold. With the information relayed by their valuable new spy, the Americans ambushed Arnold's British camp and came close to capturing Arnold himself. In July of 1781, James then found a way to infiltrate the military camp of General Cornwallis. Passing himself off as a waiter, he gathered significant information that included the number of ships and boats in and around the Hampton Roads area, including Yorktown. Using James's information, American and French forces positioned the French Navy on the Chesapeake Bay, bottling up the York River. Washington and his troops then marched south to Williamsburg to join Lafayette, where they routed the British by land and sea. The brilliant and heroic efforts of James Lafayette won him little reward at first. Even though he helped to win freedom for the people of America, those very same people refused to give James his own freedom even after 5 years of trying.
If he had fought for the British, he would have won his freedom. But because he sided with the Americans and because of the role that he played as a spy, he's not going to automatically be awarded his freedom. It's going to take a petition some years down the road, a special petition, especially for him, to the Virginia legislature in order for him to apply for and eventually win his freedom.
The Marquis de Lafayette, considered a great hero of the war, personally recommended James be considered a free man in America. In 1784, the great French general wrote to the Virginia General Assembly, "His intelligence from the enemy's camp were industriously collected and more faithfully delivered. He perfectly acquitted himself with some important commissions I gave him and appears to me entitled to every reward his situation can admit of." On January 9th, 1786, James finally gained his freedom. One of his first acts was to add to his name that of the general who inspired him and pleaded for his freedom. James the Slave became James Lafayette, an American hero of the Revolutionary War.
You're very popular.
I just tried to be myself.
Whenever I try to be myself, people don't seem to like me very much.
Cuando venga la tierra, te lo juro, semilla.
We are no longer part of this world.
God always corrects one pope with another pope.
Have you ever wanted to work in radio, whether it be a hobby or maybe stepping stone to build your career? Henry Ford College has the right program for you. TCM 189 is an 8-week course that teaches the fundamentals of broadcasting and helps people become a better broadcaster. After completing the course, graduates will be eligible for a show right here on WHFR. For more information, go to hfcc.edu. There's only a few spots per semester, and seats fill up quickly. So log on to your web advisor today and reserve your place for TCM 189.
IMPEC, every fourth Tuesday, 12 noon. Learn about people and organizations making a difference in your metro community. Get information on newly formed organizations seeking a change. Get updates from current organizations and people who are working to reach the need and concerns as well as serve. Join me every fourth Tuesday at 12 noon on IMPEC.
Join WHFR this Saturday at 2 p.m. as we broadcast live with the Friends of Metro Detroit Animals from the new Marianne Wright Center in celebration of WHFR's Pet Week. Join DJ Stephanie and Morgan as they host two-legged and four-legged friends to discuss an incredible program for the month of February, followed by a special broadcast of Lyrical Infusion at 4 p.m. It's Pet Week here at WHFR, so stay tuned for special programs all week long.
Johnny's a joker. He's a bird. A very funny joker. He's a bird. But when he jokes my honey, he's a dog. His joking ain't so funny. What a dog. Johnny is a joker that's trying to steal my baby. He's a bird dog. Johnny sings a love song like a bird. Sings the sweetest love song you ever heard. But when he sings to my gal, what a howl. On the prowl. Johnny wants to fly away and puppy love my baby. He's a bird dog. Hey bird dog, get away from my player. Hey bird dog, we're on the wrong trail. Bird dog, you better leave my loving dove alone. Hey bird dog, get away from my chick. Hey bird dog, you better get away quick. Bird dog, you better find a chick.
Bird.
He tiptoed up to reach her.
He's a bird.
Well, he's a teacher's pet now.
He's a dog.
Well, he wants he can get now.
Well, what a dog.
He even made the teacher let him sit next to my baby.
He's a bird dog.
Hey, bird dog, get away from my quail. Hey, bird dog, you're on the wrong trail. Bird dog, you better leave my loving dove.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
And dolls, you were at the malt shop with Daddy G and WHFR, and we are going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror and grab your favorite squeeze and head on down to the malt shop where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are back in the 50s.
Here she comes.
Here she comes.
That little town flirt.
Here she comes.
You're falling for her. And you're gonna get her. Yeah, I know it's so hard to resist the temptation of her tender red lips. But you can get her.
Looking
her.